If you want insight and solutions, you're in for a unique experience. One where you're free to ask questions about where you're stuck, ask and hear questions of an everyday variety, global or personal, deep or ancient. All questions are welcome. Any human issue or problem is seen with a new awareness from Patricia's powerful understanding of whole brain thinking. Receive insights you never thought were possible, and be comforted to hear some insights you always knew were right. Discover the profound and the creative value that problems can give us. And now, Patricia Sun.
Welcome to Trust the Problem. I'm Patricia Sun, and today we're really going to talk right to the core of the whole situation, why we don't trust problems, why we suffer, why we're lonely, why we hurt, why humanity doesn't allow itself to blossom. And I've been wanting to talk about this for some time, and I always have through all my workshops, but we've just had the book come out, State of Denial, by Mr. Woodward. And I really think that the State of Denial is such a perfect title because it isn't just about the nation state in denial or about the government in denial. It's really about the state of denial itself that we all are involved with. And that's what I'm going to talk about today, is denial. And many years ago, as many of you know, I've been lecturing for about 35 years. And very often I would say, when people would ask me to write a book, I'd say, well, you know, it works better if I say it, because then you can feel it. And part of what I'm trying to teach is just another dimension of connection and communication where it's felt, where it's so honest, it's so real, that it is more than words and more than ideas. It's something you actually experience. And that is best done live, or at least on tape, or with words, with living words said out loud, not written on paper, because it's a step removed. And it's a step removed that lets a lot of mischief come in, a lot of non-earnestness. I don't know how else to quite say it. But denial is our most toxic problem, and it has been for as long as I've been teaching, for 35 years. And I used to say, when people would ask me to write a book, I'd say, well, if I wrote a book, I'd have to call it Denial, and then nobody would buy it. So good for Mr. Woodward. He has written a book called State of Denial, and it's selling like hotcakes. And the reason is the timing is right. So today I'm going to talk about denial, and I'm going to talk about why we have denial, how it's human, how it hurts us, and what it needs. You know, interestingly to me, I think, is that denial needs, first, secrecy. You have to be able to keep things secret, because otherwise how can you keep denying the truth gets out? So you have to have secrecy. Secrecy is a characteristic of people who are in denial. They need it all the time. The next thing they need all the time is to lie. You need to lie when you're in denial, because it's the only way you can keep, again, the denial operating. You need to keep restructuring your presentation. You need to keep using words and ideas that are usually almost the exact opposite of what you really are doing and thinking. It's one of the big tactics or techniques of defense in denial, is to project onto others what you really are doing. And this is a serious issue. This is an important thing. And even the latest event with the representative from Florida who in sending these obscene emails and to children and young men. And the fact that everybody had to go into denial about it, the Republican hierarchy, the powers that be, they needed to go into a kind of denial and cover it up, keep it secret, lie about it, because it's impossible to integrate self-correction. That's why we have denial. Self-correction is maturity. Self-correction and the ability to contemplate yourself and self-correct, that is the next level of thinking. That's maturity. That's the ability to be awake. And so our next level is being sort of battled within ourselves. Each of us is battling it. The nation is battling it. The world is battling it. Homo sapiens is in the midst of an evolutionary leap. And the crisis that's here is the great danger and opportunity. As the ancient Chinese ideograph, which I used to quote some 25, 30 years ago, when Nixon had the sort of detente with China and Chinese came over, I remember hearing that quote at that time. And it so struck me how powerful it is, because the ideograph for crisis is a combination of danger and opportunity. And one of the things that forces it into the crisis, into the more dangerous dimension over and over, is denial. Because the opportunity is really about growth. It's really about realization. It's really about self-correction. It's about seeing what's good for its own sake. Now, many of you know that I have a premise of philosophy I've been teaching for 35 years, and it's about a consciousness beyond duality. It's moving to another place where you use your intuitive mind to be inspired, to see the whole picture, to not be a black and white thinker. And you use your logical mind, instead of in judgmental, black and white, either or thinking, you use your judgmental mind to just have good judgment, to keep accurate track of facts and detail, so you know what's going on, so you do not delude yourself. Because delusion is one of the characteristics that you need to have for denial. You have to fool yourself. And you have to deceive yourself. And, of course, you have to defend the wrong. You have to defend what's wrong, because if you're not going to look at it, you can't work to change it. You have to justify it, and you have to defend it when it's wrong. And that's the crisis we're in. That's the shift point. This is the evolutionary leap right now. This is the challenge. It's really not too bad, and it's almost an archetypal wonder that we have the administration of very dualistic, black and white, simplistic, reactionary thinkers. This is our greatest dysfunction. Doesn't mean some of the people aren't intelligent. It doesn't mean that in certain areas of their life they're not good people. It just means that they have such black and white thinking as a process, and such a desire because of their maturity for power and control over others because they feel insecure, because they are weak, personally immature, therefore weak. So there is an accruing of titles and medals and positions and claiming credit and making announcements that everything's okay when it isn't. This is the source of denial. The source of denial is really... Sorry, I paused because I was thinking that whole joke. The source of denial, you know, Nile's not a river, and denial is not a river in Egypt. I think of the source of denial. But anyway, the source of denial is really that we want to be right so much we can't bear to look at how we have been harmful, bad, not good, dishonest, escapist, stolen, plagiarized, harmed other people. It's too terrible. William Hazlett said, a hypocrite despises those whom he deceives, but he also has no respect for himself. He'd make a dupe of himself, too, if he could. Well, he does. That's called denial. That's exactly the energy behind it. And that's why there is always this quality of despicable despising of others, of weak people, that they presume are weak. If somebody's honest and fair and kind, they can be taken advantage of, therefore they're weak. That's the thinking. That's what denial does. That's why it's so toxic. And therefore, too, so denial needs secrecy, it needs lies, and it causes violence and projection. Because you cannot digest it. The energy has to go somewhere. This is part of the necessary order of how consciousness unfolds. There's a secret order in all disorder, as Carl Jung used to say. And that secret order is what we are aspiring by our lives to find and feel and live and respond to. And that's also why Carl Jung said man needs difficulty. They are necessary for health. So right now, as we look out at the world and we look at our country and we look at the state of our government, and, you know, some 30-some days before this election, which will really determine whether we, not that the Democrats are so perfect or anything, but they will at least investigate what has gone on, and that is essential for our health. We need to have hearings. We need to see what has happened. We have to see what denial has wrought. And we have to do it not for punishment, not for blaming, but for knowledge, for freedom, for our democracy, for being awake, for empowering our country. This is the next step for us. And I really do believe that the only thing that will stop there being a Democratic House and Senate is that elections will be fixed, that there will be such stress for all this to remain secret, all the mistakes, all the stuff. Everybody knows unconsciously what they've done. And they're living in denial, they're having delusions that by making pronouncements, if the president makes pronouncement, that's the way it is. It's the way many parents are that really don't know how to connect to their children. They make pronouncements that everything is fine, and then they make the children absorb all their dysfunction. And that is exactly the same kind of thing, and it's a valuable problem that we have right now, because it is the most powerful way for us to grow up, is to soften our hearts, open our eyes, trust the flow of the universe, and begin to tell the truth, reveal all the secrets, uncover the lies, straighten things out, do what's wholesome and good for its own sake, not so you can make a news bite or a sound bite or a pronouncement or write a book and have all the good words and totally not live it. It's time for us to really wake up. And we have this polarizing situation. And if indeed the House or the Senate are lost, the Republicans, and I say lost because it goes into that well of denial and let's have power over everything, as this event with the congressman who was sending these emails over a year that the head of the Republican House knew, Dennis Hassett knew, and now he doesn't remember, and everybody's not remembering now. You'll hear a lot of, well, I don't remember that. Or a lot of nitpicking in the wording. Well, I never got an email that told me that. No, somebody told you, or they sent you a letter. There's a lot of this sort of nitpicking way to lie, to cover what happened. The healthiest thing in the world, the greatest credibility the Republicans could have, would be to have everybody resign who knew anything about it and give everything a fresh chance. That would speak so well to them. But because the investment in the hypocrisy very, very difficult. And there is a quote I have by Thomas Paine that I love that kind of fits here. And it's so powerful that, and so fits. And it's written in the, you know, in the language of the 18th century. So here it is. It says, "It is impossible to calculate the moral mischief, if I may so express it, that mental lying has produced in this society. When a man has so far corrupted and prostituted the chastity of his own mind as to subscribe his professional belief to things he does not believe, he has prepared himself for the commission of every other crime." And this is where we are. We are committing crimes everywhere. We're going to war. We're losing our democracy. We don't have the House of Representatives anymore. We, you know, more rightly should be called a House of Business Representation. We're losing it. But, you know, we use phrases like the culture of corruption, but the Democrats are in it too. They felt they had to do it to compete with the Republicans, and I suppose in a way they did to get the money to have the ads. But what if they had had the courage to really start passing laws or writing laws? Or insisting on getting on the air and talking about this. And maybe they could. Maybe really this is the way the cycle had to go. There had to be enough mud on all sides, so even if one is much worse, at least enough for some humility everywhere. So that we can really just start saying, let's look at what's actually happening. And let's not be so concerned about having the power. Let's do ethically, credibly, humanely, honestly, what the democracy stands for, what the House of Representatives, as the people's house, what it represents, that the ideas of having a delay and an Abramoff would just be so horrific, there'd be just no tolerance in the beginning. Now, for that to happen, we have to really look at what did happen. That's how you clean things up. It's true in families, when somebody's done something that's very harmful to someone. You have to rectify the wrong. First you have to face it. You have to see it. Then you have to empathize with the other person and feel the harm that it caused. And in that way, you connect to the reality of what needs to be done. In that way, you mature yourself, you expand your own mind, you get yourself out of the immature thinking of black and white, and you move into being a grown-up, and you own what happened that you probably inherited from somewhere, too. It isn't about blame. It's about acknowledgement about what doesn't work and what has harmed and how do you heal it. I was recently talking with some friends and wanting to put together a conference on ethics, and I was saying, you know, we need a slightly different name because ethics is very important. One of the things I always say about democracy, there's nothing wrong with democracy that ethics wouldn't cure. And that's actually what sort of started the conversation. Because we need to bring in ethics that are, I was thinking, gentle or healthy, and I was trying to find the right word. And a friend said, well, healing ethics. And that's what we need. We need an understanding that ethics is not about judgmentalness. It's about healing through being wholesome, through being honest, through being focused. One's intelligence, one's heart, one's life force, focused on what makes things healthy, what makes them better. That has to be the core of our ethics. And because that's written by nature. Our founding fathers talked about it all the time, that there was such a thing that's in us all. And in the Old Testament, it talks about the law of God is written in our inward parts and in our hearts. And all shall know from the greatest to the least if we let that writing be felt and heard. You know, this is the place, and it is the antidote to denial. It is, and denial is the name we give to stopping that, to not allowing that to happen for short-term power, for short-term illusion of winning, or even just the short-term reaction to alleviate the pain of feeling powerless. And that does bring me to, I've often talked about, you know, the first sin is supposed to have been Adam and Eve eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Well, the knowledge of good and evil is either or thinking. It's black or it's white, it's good or it's bad, it did or it didn't. And God said, you know, you can have all this other kind of knowledge, you can live life, you can enjoy all the fruits of life, but the one kind of knowledge you shouldn't partake of is this polarized thinking, this thinking of black and white, good or evil. And of course, you know, women who are dominantly logical-minded thought, no, you know, it's good to know what's not right. And we all have that kind of collective thing. It's good to know what's not right. That's true. But what we did is we polarized it. That's different than just knowing. Knowing you will feel it as you're alive. You'll feel what's not okay. It won't feel good. It'll feel sad. You know, even children, in fact, not even, I shouldn't say even children, especially children who are closer to heaven, closer to true humanity, sense immediately when adults are being disingenuous, when adults are being dishonest. They always have this incredible expression of shock, and their mouths fall open, and they look puzzled and sad. And it's such an image I've seen so many hundreds of thousands of times in the faces of children. And it's real. Leo Tolstoy, you know, the famous Russian novelist, said, "Hypocrisy in anything whatever may deceive the cleverest and most penetrating man, but the least wide-awake children recognizes it and is revolted by it, however ingeniously it may be disguised." And that's because when we are children, we have not learned how to be so dishonest. We are still more purely human. And it's an interesting phenomenon of projection that we punish children, that the extreme denial people in our culture, part of the characteristic is a kind of sadistic anger against innocence. And it's all part of denial. What you cannot process or own in yourself, you have to project out into somebody else. And the place that is most despised are the most innocent, sweetest, kindest, generous, freest energy people in the world. That's who we dislike. That's who we need to kill. Collectively. Stamp them out because they show us up by existing. They rip the veil off our lie and our denial. That's why people like to punish children as adults. And they say, do an adult crime, do an adult time. Well, any child who has committed a crime that is heinous, terrible, has been harmed, brutalized, to the point of acting out the harm and the brutalization they have received. Children act out what is done to them in some way or another, either by repressing it or projecting it or acting it out. And it becomes the lid, the fuel for denial. That's why denial exists. And it's very important that I talk about the natural humanity of denial, the natural reason why we have denial. Denial exists as a fail-safe neurological mechanism that when our minds are vulnerable, young, immature, not fully developed, and we are treated horrifically, when some trauma occurs that is so off the mark of goodness, so off the mark of healthiness and wholesomeness and sanity and kindness, cruel. The mind, for certain individuals, and it varies for different individuals what their tolerance level is, and then even how they will handle it and how they will process it. We're all different that way. But there still is this incipient beginning energy that causes the violation and causes the trauma. And what the brain does to defend itself is it goes into denial. When it cannot process it and it leaves you paralyzed in pain and in overload of this does not compute and it's too horrific to deal with, the mind has a way, especially when you're young, because it's so malleable, it's still adjustable, it's still flexible, it seals that up into one personality. This is the reason for split personalities. And many people would not be maybe clinically defined as having split personalities, you know, but many people have sort of milder versions of this, where they have components. In certain issues, they act in certain bizarre ways, and in other areas, they don't. Like this congressman, everybody thought he was so nice and so kind, and then this man who killed all these girls because of whatever grudge he was holding for 20 years from when he was 12 years old. So whatever molestation, whatever violation, whatever trauma occurred to him, he could not contain it. So it sealed over, it festered because he could not integrate it or process it as he got older. And that's what causes it to splinter out, to come out, and sort of like take over, because it's energy that's compressed and not processed. Processing is everything. It doesn't mean you have to know every detail. It means that where there's wound, it has to be healed by being reintegrated. It's like Desmond Tutu, Bishop Tutu, and truth and reconciliation. You can't just have the truth. You have to have truth and kindness. If you have truth and kindness, then you begin to reconcile it. You go through the process. And that's how the redemption occurs. It doesn't occur by edict. And many people believe, you know, the blessing of God is forgiveness. Well, that's true, but you know what that is? That's you allowing the Spirit of God in you so you forgive yourself, so that you can face what you have done, so you can then rectify and correct it. It's not getting off the hook. It's processing. It's going into it, facing it, having compassion for yourself as you would have for anyone else, and not live in denial, and heal yourself. This is how we grow. This is the necessity. Denial is the problem. We need to trust that the reason that problem is there is because we have so much that we could not process before, so much in this seemed impossible to face. And part of our maturing is to steadily face everything. That is why it is essential that we have hearing and why there be a change. I'm not particularly pro-Republican or Democrat. I just know that for our democracy, we need, like any human being, face what we have done so we can heal it. And this is what the evolutionary leap is about. We're going to take a little break here. We'll be right back. You're listening to Trust the Problem, and I'm Patricia Sun, and today we're talking about denial.
Trust the Problem is sponsored by a nonprofit organization, the Institute of Communication for Understanding, ICU. We rely on you, our listeners, for donations to keep us on the air. To help, please visit patriciasun.com and receive a free Can't Take Sides When You Know the Earth is Round t-shirt with your donation. Thank you. The Problem. And now, Patricia.
Welcome back to Trust the Problem. I'm Patricia Sun, and today we're talking about denial. And from my point of view, the problem of denial is a magnificent problem. It is the very thing that is the crux of the matter of our time, and it is the gateway into the evolutionary leap. I've always thought this is not new for me. I've been teaching this for 35 years, and denial is the one that you always have to sort of approach tenderly to sort of warm people up to the capacity and the capability to look at themselves, to work on themselves, and not just automatically project onto someone else. And one of the few psychologists, psychiatrists that most understood this particular dynamic, I believe, was Carl Jung. And one of my favorite quotes from Carl Jung is that the images of the unconscious place a great responsibility upon a man. Failure to understand them, or a shirking of ethical responsibility, deprives him of his wholeness and imposes a painful fragmentariness on his life. I'm going to say it one more time. The images of the unconscious places a great responsibility upon a man. Failure to understand them, or a shirking of ethical responsibility, deprives him of his wholeness and imposes a painful fragmentariness on his life. And this is exactly where we are. Our collective unconscious, the sins of the fathers, if you will, the slavery, the wars, the injustice, the totalitarian, the tyrant thinking, the king, the power over, all of these great harms that humanity has done. And each country, each cultural group has its own version and its own assortment of it. And what we try to do is project our fear onto someone else. Carl Jung also said, and he was, as a European, of course, he was looking at it through, in the responsible sense for his, the group he lived in, and he said, because the European does not know his own unconscious, he does not understand the East, and projects into it everything he fears and despises in himself. And that's why I was saying before, denial is a refusal to grow up. Denial is a refusal to face your shadow, to heal yourself. Denial is hoping to be able to go backwards and not face what's coming up next. That if you can go backwards and just force things into the old way you imagine is okay, everything will be all right. The only thing is, it absolutely never works. Never. Because life keeps unfolding. It grows. There is an unfolding to the universe. There is a natural order of development. And problems, as I've often said, come up precisely because we are ready to see something is wrong. We can do a lot of things that are not good. And when we're so collectively in it, we really don't even have much awareness that it's not good. We're just sort of like sheep, social animals, living, doing what everybody does. It's what historians always ask us to have some sympathy for when you read perhaps something Jefferson or the Founding Fathers wrote, and certain tolerance for slavery when they were so adamant about freedom for humanity. It's because they were living in it. And there's this skewing kind of denial, but a collective one. And what's happening now with our instant communication, television, faxes, phones, emails, instant messaging, is instantaneously concepts, thoughts can shoot out around the world in one moment. And it's very chaotic right now. And that's actually good. Again, talking to my friends the other day, I was saying that, and I've said often in my workshops that, I haven't said it lately, but years and years ago, I used to say confusion is a very high state of being. And the reason why confusion is a high state of being is that you have moved out of your absolutist thinking and you have let enough new information come in so that you're overloaded and you're confused. That is a moment of power because in that place you can be creative. In that place you can reassimilate and reorganize, including new information that didn't exist before. this is why it facilitates your ability to have courage. It lets you know new things. It lets you reassociate things in a new way and realign and see things with fresh eyes. And all of this is part of the evolutionary leap, the ability to do that. And, you know, one of the things that I think is kind of interesting right now, well, I just want to make one little quote from Anin, who, a writer, who always had these interesting mystical quotes, I think, sometimes in the midst of very kind of human novels. And she said, life shrinks or expands in proportion to one's courage. And that goes along with what Carl Jung was saying, that our consciousness shrinks or expands in direct connection to our willingness to face the unconscious and to not shirk ethical power and ability that's within us. And if we do shirk it, we become blind. It's like you have too many blinders on, and that's the denial. You become incapacitated through your denial. And that's what's happened to our whole government right now. There's so much denial about selling out democracy to corporate interests. And, you know, the corporations are kind of like collective mindlessness for a goal of making money. And there's nothing wrong with making money. And as I've always said about, as I just said before, there's nothing wrong with capitalism that ethics wouldn't cure. The problem is it takes a grown-up to step in as you practice capitalism so that there's ethics. But if you have unconscious people, it's very easy to get just blinded so much, so many blinders just towards getting, that you can poison the planet, you can poison the children, you can poison the air, you can start wars, you can stop inventions that make us not need oil, that poison the air, and we could use wind power and solar power, and we could totally have a closed system that was very heavenly on Earth. I mean, really healthy. We could have electric cars that ran quietly and cleanly and with very little moving parts, so there was little repair and no pollution. Plug it in at night in your house, plug it in at work when you go to work. It's so easy to do. But we still insist, and it's part of denial. It's not wanting to grant the truth room, because somehow we will personally lose out if we do. And we've got that conditioned into us. We've been programmed with commercials and sort of mindless pressures. You know, one of the problems with corporations is they don't have a soul. They are made up of people who have souls, but people sort of set that aside. And a corporation, unfortunately, is just made up by people, or fortunately, it's made up by people. And unfortunately, we've given it the power and rights of a person with none of the responsibility or insight or spirit or soul of a person. And that's why we're in such trouble. It's not a battle against anything, any other old known category. That's why I don't particularly care whether it's Republican or Democrat or, socialist or capitalist or right wing. The thing I used to say for decades is extreme right, extreme left are the same. They're operating out of powerlessness. There's all kinds of possibilities in the middle. And in the middle is that creative variety that lets us solve many problems. And the same is true, and why we have to trust problems is because when a problem comes up, instead of polarizing, which short circuits our creativity and makes us fight for one simplistic pole and not have the advantage of using all that middle knowledge, all the events, all the situations, all the different possibilities, different ways of doing things, all that gets thrown out the window, and we talk in simple speak. We talk in what I used to call clump thinking. Everything just goes into a clump. And when you think like that so simplistically, you are incapacitated from solving problems. And it causes pain, and it causes war. And George Orwell, I mean, he's so appropriate to our time right now. It's just amazing. And I just happen to have this one quote. There's another one I'm looking for. I'll find it maybe later or another day. But anyway, he said here, serious sport has nothing to do with fair play. It's bound up with hatred, jealousy, boastfulness, disregard of all rules, and sadistic pleasure in witnessing violence. In other words, it is war minus the shooting. And, of course, the thing that's important here is now we're in war. And we've got not only the shooting, but the bombing. And we are brain damaging our soldiers, the ones that survive. And because of so many, the injury that's most pronounced and hardest to observe and treat, because of all these concussions to their heads, from these explosions that they are encountering over and over. The simplistic thinking of punishment, wanting to jump to the position of punishment, denies the empathy of why someone who has done something that is not good, including the sadist, by the way, why they are like that. To have compassion as to why someone does something terrible does not give you the choice of saying it's okay or punish them. The choice is how many things can you discover to help stop it, to help heal it, to help understand it, to help disable it. What can we do that if that were our first focus instead of projection and denial and simplistic clump thinking, if we didn't just go into this simple think, we would be able to invent all kinds of very healthy ways to stop abuse of children, to stop crimes, to model to people who are dysfunctional ways that work better, to perhaps isolate them, yes, of course, but not torture them. This idea, by the way, of torture is a decadent. To ever conceive of torturing anyone is a decadent and degenerate concept. It's degenerate to think it has to be done. It's degenerate to authorize it being done, and it is degenerate to do it. There are so many other solutions that work that don't cause you to become sadistic. Become what you resist, as the ancient Chinese said. We have to pay attention to this. I remember the first time I heard on television in my life, in all of America's interaction for all the years that I've been alive, first time I heard someone say on television, it was on Fox, it was a retired colonel, and it was before 9/11, but he said, you know, we have to start thinking about using methods that we don't normally use to extract information, and then the interviewer says, you mean torture? And he said, well, yes, we need to consider that. I remember as though someone had socked me with a piece of ice. I mean, it was just shocking. It was so shocking, I could hardly believe my ears, that we had degenerated to a place where the public forum would be having discussions about whether torture is okay. I thought we had evolved beyond that. And, of course, no. We are devolving every day. But the good news is, as we are devolving, we are also observing our devolution. We're observing our degeneracy. We're observing how it doesn't work. That pronouncements that will win, I can't remember the name of the fellow, I think he's an editor at the Spectator magazine, and I can't remember. He's always on Fox, and I remember right after Saddam Hussein's statue came. came down, and George Bush was on a Lincoln big carrier in his little suit and big banner, mission accomplished. And he was then in the studio, and he was gloating, and he said, "Well, so much for the, you know, the crazy liberals that said, you know, we'd be caught in a morass, in a quagmire." He said, "You know, this just goes to show we know what we're doing." And I thought, you know, I don't even know how he has the nerve to say that, because it's going to be a mess. It's going to be a mess. And so now that it's a mess, like they all said, well, no one could have imagined it would be such a mess. It would be so hard. Well, yes, many people did imagine it. But they didn't imagine it because they were in denial, because they wanted to do what they wanted to do because they want oil, and they want the people who their clique is, their association of, where I'll keep your myth alive if you keep my myth alive. And that is a defense. That's why they get so frantic. They can't bear to hear anybody say anything different. And any time you hear someone not being able to bear it, and that sort of, I remember when they had the voting in Florida, and they were trying to do the recounts, and they had the voting chads, and they had these people. I remember this one guy, he almost looked like a cartoon character. He looked like a maniac. He was so hysterical about just, like, don't let anybody count any more votes. This is it. And that's the denial. That's the thing that comes up, you know, the lying, the secrecy. You need to keep it secret. You think you have a right to fix votes. You think you have a right to fix the electronic machines. You think you have a right to set up electronic machines, knowing full well in advance they'll be easy to program and reprogram. And they knew that. That the media, I heard many computer experts all around the country on various talk shows sort of calling in and saying, this is very dangerous. This is so easy to corrupt. People don't realize it may seem efficient, but it's so easy to doctor. And so maybe we'll do that. I hope we don't. I hope we observe it. I hope enough people are willing to not be in denial, that they go to the polls, that they observe, that when there's irregularities, they videotape it, they take notes, they interview people, that we stay awake, not for a gotcha, but for a realization. So we're awake. So we know what we're doing. It's not about getting anybody. I mean, Democrat or Republican, if they are fixing the ballot, everything has to come out, and it's not a matter of tit for tat. It's just get it out. The very essence of democracy is that you vote. If the votes are totally taken over and manipulated, you have become a dictatorship. You've lost it. That's gone. And when President Carter said, you know, our last election, in the many elections that he's been asked to supervise around the world, would have failed the criteria for not allowing enough people to have the vote, for the obstruction of the vote in so many ways. I do recommend to you go online, Robert Kennedy's Rolling Stone article is another one, and it's quite complete, really tells you a great deal about the different kinds of irregularities and concerns, and what people are trying to do to fix it. This is not just political. This is consciousness. This is not about getting somebody. This is not about deposing anyone. This is about being awake. And if we keep that in mind, our ethics and our spirit and our internal sense of integrity and power will be strong. Our self-esteem will grow. That's what Carl Jung was talking about, that we need our difficulties. They're necessary for help. They cause us to grow. And we have to give ourselves a chance to have the insight, to rediscover over and over again the order of the universe, and to not shirk our ethical responsibility, because it truly does deprive us of our wholeness and our evolving consciousness and the enriching of our soul and the purpose of life. And without that, we become very self-hating. We need then projection. We need then more denial. We become more ruthless. We get a little sadistic. And it causes, as Carlyn said, that painful fragmentariness of life. And, of course, people talk to me all the time about how everybody's so overloaded. But we're also overloaded because the lid is coming off everything, right and left. We are becoming more and more awake every day. And things are being revealed, and we can barely stand it. But instead of feeling bad about that, rejoice. Rejoice in your heart. And, you know, George Orwell was so good, and he said so many things predicted or set up to be looked at with through those eyes. One of the things, this is, you know, a lot of religious philosophy, especially Buddhist philosophy and so on, people like to talk about non-attachment. And, you know, there's different kinds of non-attachment. Obviously, being attached to being in denial is not healthy and so on. But having an attachment to healthiness, to kindness, to the truth, to the process, that's good. And George Orwell said the main motive for non-attachment is a desire to escape from the pain of living, and above all, from love, which, sexual or non-sexual, is hard work. And the reason why love is hard work, not because love itself is hard work, but when we love, or when we attempt to love, when we recognize we need to love, it's come up because we have a problem and it's not easy to love. The problem is there because of unprocessed stuff, unprocessed injury that is defending us. And just like the brain makes that defense when it's too much to handle, it encapsulates it up, puts it aside, and lets you develop another part of your personality so you can continue and you can function. So there's a really good reason why we go into denial. It's part of our biology, but it's also part of our biology to model healthiness, to be wholesome, to choose it, to choose it. This is our great power as grown-ups, as human beings, is to choose to be creative, to choose to follow the flow of goodness, kindness, wholesomeness, well-being, integrity, ethics. That aliveness gives you the courage, the heart, to process your own denial, to see other people's denial, and face it not with judgmental attacks, but with just the truth. That always reminds me of the quote that Harry Truman had, you know, I'm going to have to just remember it. I'll get it close. Then he said, the Republicans think I give them hell. I don't give them hell. I just tell the truth, and they think it's hell. I think that's still true. You know, it's true for the Democrats, too. It's just they're not quite as invested in the black and white thinking. They're not as invested in polarized thought. They acknowledge human beings make mistakes. Now, it's true that when we make mistakes, we shouldn't just go into the either-or solution of, oh, it's a mistake, let it go. No, no, it's a mistake, let's correct it, let's rectify it, let's investigate it, let's look at it, let's process it, let's heal it. And either-or thinking is either the two poles of either punishment and attack, or deny and escape, or make believe it didn't happen, or, well, we're all human and let it go. Yes, we're all human, and yes, there's mistakes, and we need to look at them. We just need to do it with kindness. This is the leap. This is the next level of being. And so we're really letting these enormous upheavals cause change. That is something we need. And we need it pretty desperately because it's quite global. It's if we really look at it, there's nothing but Third World War and a kind of annihilation. And so all we have to do at any time is to stop, negotiate, be human, respect other human beings, respect their injury, their wounds, their hurt, try to rectify the wrongs we've done, and not project and box people as enemies, as evildoers, Everybody does some evil sometimes. And the job is to face it and correct it. Unfortunately, you know, that's the problem with projection, is that you need to put it out onto someone else. Now, there's an author, a playwright, I have a great quote here. I think it fits, too. He said, Jean Kerr says, "Man is the only animal that learns by being hypocritical. He pretends to be polite, and then eventually he becomes polite." And I wanted to throw this quote in because this is another part of the process, that first we have the hypocrisy so we can see how it doesn't work. We also can do this. They used to call it in psychology when I was teaching and practicing, the as if. When you're not able to do something you know is good, you really can't authentically do it, act as if. Try to do it as if, even though you're not fully behind it. Because if it is a wholesome thing, it is a healthy thing, it may feel awkward, it may feel phony, there may be parts of you that really just go, yeah, and don't want to do it. But if you sort of begin, you begin to see how it changes your thoughts, your energy, your attitude, what you project, and therefore it changes other people's responses to you. This is a great power. And it's what I found, something I teach, I call matching energy. Whatever you're feeling, you're sending. And what we need to work on is rectifying the feeling inside it, so we don't have to have that terrible hypocrisy inside that Payne was talking about. That we might be able to really be able to work on ourselves and change it from the inside out, so we are healing and healing the world and not needing to be hypocritical. And it can start with small things every day, and it'll slow you down. You won't be so quick on the uptake, but you'll create a different energy around you, and it's how you transform the world. And I really honestly believe it is what Jesus was teaching when he said, "Turn the other cheek." He was teaching that by being loving, by meeting fear, anger, meanness, cruelty, hostility, and all the other stuff, with a kind of kindness, you create an energy that lifts the veil, that lets the person lighten up on their own self-hatred, lighten up on their own judgmentalness, so they can begin to rectify the wrongs they're doing. And that's what's so powerful, and that's Gandhi was teaching from Jesus' teaching. It's what Martin Luther King magnificently taught by being it. I remember recently just hearing a quote about people who listened to him said, "You didn't hear his words only. He said great words, but you felt him when he spoke. You knew it was sincere. You knew there was a power in him. He believed it. He was inspired by it himself." And this is the quickening. This is the next level. This is the courage, the healing, the undoing of denial. And that's our great power. That's what we're longing to do. It's how we will ultimately create heaven on earth. And this is all the dark before the dawn. This is all the opportunity, the crisis, the opportunity to transform to heaven on earth. And it is by recognizing that if we don't, we just keep making it more dangerous until we will. So we might as well. So trusting the problem is a huge thing. It really keeps going. It's everywhere. So thank you so much for being with me. I'm Patricia Sun.
You've been listening to Trust the Problem with Patricia Sun. This program and its content is copywritten to Patricia Sun, all rights reserved, 2006.